to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures are now 13. We've got the NASDAQ futures on 19, Dow futures on 120. We got oil up 45 cents. We've got the 10-year unchanged at 165. Frank, how are you?
Good.
What? We've got a couple of blips going on in the market here today. And by the way, was it one of your relatives? You or Matty Weber were in charge of that ship, I hear, driving it away. Having a little beer on the side.
Well, the family motto is drive it like it's stolen.
Yes. Anyway, the blips are some, who are these guys? I mean, the market's been all over the place, but not somewhat dramatically here, but Credit Suisse warned Monday of a highly significant hit to its first quarter results. Their shares are down 13%. Who's this company that lost all his money? That they're talking about here. I mean,
investment firm.
And Archegos, Archegos, Archegos Capital Management was forced to liquidate positions at the end of last week. Moves by the multi-billion-dollar U.S. family office founded by. How many times have these guys from Tiger Management got in the world in trouble? Founded by former Tiger Management equity analyst Bill Huang, caused a wave of selling pressure on Friday with U.S. media stocks and Chinese internet ADRs taking the brunt. Wasn't one of our media stocks, Disney, wasn't Disney, not Disney, but was it CBS Viacom was down like 40% or something?
It was insane.
Yeah.
And I really don't understand what Archegos owned. They're telling us what they had to liquidate.
Well, you liquidate what you got. You don't necessarily liquidate what you
got. You liquidate what you got, but they aren't telling us what got them into trouble, are they?
No, that's part I've been trying to dig around.
I've looked for that, too. I mean, Baidu was down 18%.
Well,
Amazon.
Well, that was yet another issue, was the Chinese internet companies. Somebody was jumping all over those guys, too. And I think they're two separate stories, I think. But who the hell knows?
But could the problem be Chinese? We don't know. We have a Chinese family office.
Yeah.
We have the Chinese market.
Let's stop for a second. For the non-traders listening, when you say, say for instance, you have a hedge fund and you get yourself, well, whatever the fund it is, and you get yourself in Dutch with, whatever, silver futures, which silver hasn't moved, so it can't be that. If you're getting yourself in Dutch with silver futures and you're forced to liquidate, it's not just the silver. You liquidate what you have of value. So if you're a huge owner of Apple, you liquidate your Apple, even though there's nothing wrong with your Apple, right? So I mean, it's
exactly.
And that's so you just so people kind of understand that when Frank and I are talking trader talk. So the question is, I don't know. Was there a connection between? But look at the normal people, Credit Suisse. But now they're saying that all kinds of people are involved in this. Nomura also issued a trading update on Monday morning, warning of a significant loss as one of its U.S. subsidiaries, resulting from the client's transaction with the client stateside. Japan's largest investment bank said it was evaluating the potential extent of its loss, estimated $2 billion. Its shares fell 16%. How is it, Frank, that the little guy can never get a loan for a friggin' car? Well, you can now, but. I mean, yet these guys managed to get themselves involved with all these places to this huge extent. I mean, why?
Why don't they give you and me a shot just to play with a couple bills?
I know we could. I think
I could do it.
We're not as sexy enough. We wouldn't. Got a hunch, bet a bunch, as they used to say, right? We're not that kind of guys.
Well, we could be. maybe not at this juncture in our life, but it's just multiplying what you normally do.
Well, Manny couldn't do it either. His wife would kill him.
Just well, mine would, too.
Well, then what's my problem?
You know, I have a wife.
Well, but
I don't start there.
I still could never do that with somebody else's money. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. I could.
God. Heads, Frank's taking his Series 65. There's your first foray to getting customers. Oh, yeah, I could take a big risk with those guys, too. God. No,
I think a lot of what we see going on is the lack of liquidity.
Well,
and that's exacerbating the problem. You can't get out of a position. You can get in. What we used to call the Hotel California trade.
Well, just so you know, I mean, I have no idea what this family office's deal was. But your typical hedge fund, let's put it this way. When I manage money for people, I either do it one of two ways. I either do it just regularly at PTI Securities where people have an account, and they'll give me discretionary authority over part of it. I mean, part of it people might just keep for themselves, all the stocks they bring in, and say for this amount, you know, put it in a protected index program or whatever. So, I mean, it's kind of right there for all to see, and there you just pay, you know, regular commissions, which really aren't all that high. Or if it's through our investment advisor arm, you just pay a fee. Okay. I mean, and we don't, you know, a lot of people charge 1.5, 2. We don't charge that. But anyway, that's how you get paid. Now, a hedge fund is different. Sometimes, I mean, I don't know if anybody got big ones enough to still charge 2 and 20, Frank? I mean, hedge fund is a carving out of the act. We do never participate in any of the profits in the account. Of course, you know, if the account doubles, you know, that'd be nice, in 1 year.
Well, you still have hedge funds that have an annual fee.
Yeah, I mean.
And a cut of the profits.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is it used to be, and again, I spent a lot of time in the University of Chicago screwing around with executive packages and how they would, you know, make people act. But if it was 2 and 20, the manager, say me, and I never had one of these things, would get 2%, like, no matter what, and you get 20% of the winnings. But you don't come up with anything for the losings. So if all of a sudden you start out and somebody gives you, you know, $1 billion, say, which would be nice, and the first month you head off to the racetrack, literally, and you lose like $100 million, you've got no interest in that fund because you're not going to get your 20% because you're not up. So, Your incentive is to really be skewed to the upside. And if you want to take a big risk, if you win a bunch of money, you get 20% of it. If you lose it, you don't lose anything. You still get your 2%. So
it depends on how often they also reset that percentage.
Right, but I'm talking about a yearly basis.
The lifetime of the investment, but I know some of them weren't.
There was a guy in, whoever would know the name, so I won't say who it was, on the Board of Trade for a long time. Now, again, he's older. He's got to be, I don't know, I'm sure he's retired. I hope he's not dead. But he was one of the biggest managers over on the Board of Trade. And so he started out with this fund, and they just, you know, went to the races. I don't know what it was, corn or wheat or something. And he loses like 20% of the fund in like 2 months and then just says, ah, screw it, and just gave everybody their 80% of their money back and started a new one. Well, in like 2 days, the new one was full up with money because, oh, this guy could never screw up twice in a row. I'm thinking, how do you do that? You just, you know, you're in there for 2 and 20, wherever he was, and then you decide, okay, you know, we're going to take a, you know, 50-50 shot on the moon. So if you make $1 billion, you get $200 million. If you lose $1 billion, we'll just close it up. But that's how, I'm not saying this family office was like that, but that's the way a lot of these hedge funds were put together. So you wonder, when you wonder why they took the kind of risk they did, all you have to do is look at the payout schedule, and it's fairly obvious, right?
Right, and then you wonder who clears them.
Well, I just read off the name.
Nomura? It sounds that way, doesn't it?
Well, it seems, from what I hear, I was talking to some people last night, Friday night, and there's only three players really around, SocGen, Merrill Lynch and Goldman. ABN is they're SocGen now, right? ABN. Mm-hmm. Those are like, I mean, if you're going to be a real big shot on the floor and make markets everywhere, of which there's like four or five firms, if that, Citadel being the biggest. I mean, I think they're the biggest. I mean, there's only like three or four places you can be. And, it's not like when Frank and I went to the floor, there were probably what, 12 clearing firms, maybe 10, and all would try and grab a market maker, and, you know, it was good business for them. But now nobody wants any of that. You could never put, you know, even 200 grand in an account and become a market. I mean, I don't even think you could stand in the VIX pit for that, could you? I mean, nobody wants to clear you.
I have no idea. I'm sure you have to be pretty well capitalized.
Because everything is, it's just different. And I don't think it's any better, because a lot of the stuff we've been doing for people, I mean, I see market degradation all the time in terms of spread orders.
Well, that's why when they liquidated, they were down 40%,
yeah.
20%, 18%, because everybody sees the problem. And obviously, it's not low enough for Goldman Sachs to step in and buy it like they did
right.
with long-term capital.
Right, and they did with
Simplot. So there's something, I mean, we have that going on, and we're at all-time highs. You know, close enough in the S&P that it's like, do you want to take somebody out at the top?
Frank, why do you think, you get out, you know people, you know guys. Why is it that in the last 6 months, I'll be shameless with this. I mean, what I do for people is I do a lot of hedge portfolios. In other words, if you want to be a little safer than just being along the market, I find a way to do that for you. I mean, it's like buying insurance on your car. If it goes up 1 year, you don't
wreck it.
It's
like painting a bridge and having a net underneath you.
Well, but it really is, at the end of the year, if you didn't wreck your car, I mean, I guess you could feel you pissed away your insurance money, but most people don't feel that way. But if you protect the market, which costs, by the way, and the market goes up, you feel like somebody, raped you or robbed you because you shouldn't have had to pay that. Because, by the way, the market always goes up. Listen to all the people on TV. But I've had probably 15 to 20, I'm going to say regular people we know, Frank, will come to me with $1 million, $2 million in a 401k or something, another retirement account of another kind, IRA, and they're just balls out long, and have been for a while. And they go, I think the market looks a little wobbly here. I'd like to protect this. By the way, now I'm 65, not 45. And I said, well, sure, we can do stuff if you want, whatever you want. I mean, if it's a 401k,
what's your goal?
Yeah, maybe you should just lighten up into cash. Well, I'm not making any money on cash. But at the end of the conversation, they just want, and I'll get 5 or 6 phone calls, as many as 10 maybe, if we have 2 or 3 days down on the market, where people are sort of thinking about it. I mean, now what if this thing goes down? What if my $1.5 million it took my entire life to get together, all of a sudden is $1 million, now what do I do? And as soon as we have an up day, if you send an email out to somebody and say, we were talking last week, if the market pulls back, I'll just ride it out. There's this weird old mentality here that maybe you made money you didn't think you should have made, but somehow you like owe it to the market to give some back if it goes down, and then eventually it'll be okay and it'll go back up again. And, and maybe that obviously that strategy's worked for a long period of time, but the people I'm talking to are not as young as they were when the long period of time started. And they just can't break out of the mess that somehow I owe this to the market. I just have to be in here. This is it. And if it goes up a little further, I just somehow or another I'm getting robbed. If I get out at a record high 3 weeks ago and we make another new record by 0.1%, that somehow I lost money. I mean, no you didn't. I mean, the
non-pros look at profits. You and I, our job is to look at the risk first.
Right.
And that's what happens. They refuse to look at the risk. Oh, come on, Frank. It goes up all the time.
But one of these days, Frank, it's not going to. And I'm going to get these 10 phone calls, and my response is going to be, you had your chance. I got one guy, hello to this, I'm going nameless. The guy's got this huge honking account, right? And he was affiliated with, you know, some other group I deal with. And he says, well, what I really need is I need somebody to watch over this, do my trades for me, and plot out some kind of a risk strategy for me. And, we'll get into it gradually type of thing. I mean, the guy's got a bazillion positions, and he's one guy, and he's like 7 years old. Yep. And then all of a sudden, if the market goes back up, so finally, but the thing of it is, Frank, is people don't get it. If you're going to, I said, look at this. Finally, I sent a guy an email, and I said, look, here's the deal. I'm willing to help you. I said, but for you to have an account over at IB, because that's where he's familiar with, and so you to put an account over at IB, it's going to take you a week just to get everything together, because now, getting an account is like, adopting a kid, for God's sake. So, not our fault. It's just the way it is. I said, it's going to be a week. I said, you don't have to fund it. You don't ever have to look at it. Just open it. Because then, if all of a sudden something happens, you need me to help you, you can transfer your stuff in a day or part of it or whatever, or some cash or whatever. You can fund it whenever you want to. I said, but if all of a sudden stuff starts to happen, and you all of a sudden need my help, I'm 10 days away from helping you. At the best. And if the market goes bonkers, that 10 days will stretch to 2 weeks, right? Because nobody will be open up accounts. Nobody will want to. I said, you don't have to do anything. But they somehow think that even the negative vibe that you're going to give the market by even thinking about hedging it or something. Yet I know my heart of hearts, Frank, that someday where there's going to be a comeuppance here, and all these people that thought they were going to retire in $1.5 million are going to have a million or less, and at least for a while. I mean, I'm not saying we'll never come back. But I'm not from the group where if I buy a stock and my great-great-grandkid sells it for a penny more 30 years from now, somehow we made money. I mean, that is stone-cold ignorant if you think that way. I mean, it is. But sometimes retail people do. I mean, a little harsher on retail people, Frank. But if it's yours, you don't owe the market anything. You don't owe if it goes back 8%, I'm still in the house's money. If it looks toppy to you, just get out for it. You can always get back in. What's the difference? If you
doing nothing is a strategy.
Absolutely.
People don't understand that.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's a viable strategy. It's probably perhaps the most important one in your quiver of arrows. I mean, how often have you heard somebody say, hey, look at GameStop. Think of how much you can make.
You and I would immediately say, look how much you could lose if you the horse doesn't come over to, the Lone Ranger doesn't come over the hill when you need him.
Right, it's like, are you watching GameStop? That's it. I'm watching it.
Yep. I don't. Strange world. So what do you make of the? Now we're talking about a $3 trillion infrastructure bill, and we're talking about. Are we just going crazy here with this print the money stuff, Frank? I mean, there's no way on earth we're. And then some people are incredulous. No, we're not going to tax people. We're not going to raise taxes. Are you out of your mind? We're not going to raise
taxes. That worked well in Illinois, didn't it?
Yeah.
let's not raise taxes. Let's not pay our bills.
Well, just as an aside, I mean, when you look at the way, and this, you guys kick me on this one, when you look at politics, the way politics ought to be is, where people run for office, two guys, two ladies, two whoever run for mayor, the debate should be, and Frank says that he can do a nice job in the city, whatever, city of Mayberry, he can do a nice job in the city with 50 government employees and a tax rate of 9%. And I say, wait a minute, Frank's an idiot. I can run the city with 40 employees and a tax rate of 7.5%, and we're all, and that's what the debate should be. It should be an efficiency debate, right? Because most cities.
Yeah, what am I giving up when it's 40 employees and 7.5%?
Yeah, well, I mean, what am I giving up?
What am I getting?
But the thing that screws the politics all up, Frank, when you come right down to it, when you cut away the wheat from the chaff, the thing that screws it all up is somebody who's smart enough to borrow to further people and further generations and give you 150% on the buck in the 1 year, and you're happy as a pig in slop. You don't realize that the money's going out there. I mean, how many people in Chicago or Illinois were happy as hell. Not, you know, not me or you, because we're not getting it, but we're happy as hell because everybody's getting a raise, everybody's getting a pension they don't deserve, and oh, by the way, the taxes are here, and it's a real number. It's a number we can all afford. And all of a sudden, here we are 20 years later going, wait a minute, those guys didn't do anywhere near what they said they were going to do. They just borrowed from somebody else to get there. And that's what, I was out with a bunch of, even the 8-year-old kid we were with is a Trumper on a Saturday night. How bad is that? But
you should call DCFS. Maddie agrees with that.
It's pretty close. But, I gotta tell you where we went to Saturday night in a minute, but it's all about the cash. It should be that
you sound like a hooker.
Well, but the Republicans basically, want to give you everything, or they want to keep the taxes down, okay? But they also, but they're also unwilling to cut programs. So they want to borrow money. Now the Dems want to give you everything, especially if you're, you know, they're, when I say they're, the people they think vote for them, which means minorities and so forth, which is actually changing, but they want to just give people money and buy votes, and they won't raise the taxes to the point where so both of them are lying to you. One wants to give.
The guy who doesn't lie to us, Adam Kinzinger, did you hear him yesterday? He said the Republicans' basic problem right now is their only strategy right now is to call Democrats douchebags.
Well,
it begins and ends right there.
Well, but that's been the loyal opposition strategy now for what, 20 years?
Since Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, pretty much. So on the good news though, Frank, Saturday night, just so you know, the Sum America is still there. I go over to my significant other and she goes, her cousin just called. How about meeting him for dinner at this place? Like, what was the name of the city? I forgot. The
Sills in Rockdale.
In Rockdale. And Maddie, even know where Rockdale is?
Southwest somewhere, right?
Well, yeah. It's, I guess. So
it's about the
my
extent
wife
of it.
Did.
So we pull off on this exit on Route 80 somewhere in Joliet, and we go through these side streets that look like the land of time forgot. And I go, oh, we got to be in the wrong spot. I don't know. I got Gladys or something on her machine. And sure enough, we turn a corner, and it's like in a car on the street. It looked like a neutron bomb went off, and all of a sudden I see all these cars. It's kind of a nice place. We pile in, and it looks like a Tony Soprano joint. And really nice bar, white tablecloths, everybody sitting down, really nice menu. I'm sitting there, where did this place come from, or how long has it been? It's like in the middle of steel mills and stuff. You can only imagine back in the day all these guys in there drinking for lunch and everything. And we had an unbelievable dinner. Everybody, of course, Frank, gets these huge hunks of cow, which I'm not really big on, but everybody gets them like medium rare or rare. They're like running around the table, and I'm going, but everybody having a good time, you know. The oysters, they still got the shrimp Dijon, the south side stuff. And you're like, this is we'll talk about.
Did they have a relish tray?
Oh God, yeah, you got the relish tray. One thing you didn't get though, you didn't get the tray with all the green onions and the carrots and stuff in there. That's the one thing we didn't get. Like, you could get a
salad. They have beets?
You got the beets. You got the beets, the potato salad, or not the potato salad, beets, coleslaw, and cottage cheese.
Okay.
But you got the beets. Oh, yeah. Matty, you ever been to a place where you get the beets?
Yeah, but it's been a long time.
It's been a while. And of course, you know, you don't just get your dinner.
Go
you get
to Wisconsin. Susan and I want to take a supper club tour.
Oh, they're nice. There's one right on right by Route 50 there. It's an exit after that. But of course,
it's more fun when you go up to places like Holstein, Wisconsin, or those little towns. All of a sudden, there's a great place where the whole town goes to drink, and they have, you know, fish on Friday.
Oh yeah,
well, they had the rib on Saturday. You did it.
They had the piano player going. They had the whole. It was just like something out of the 50s, for God's sake. And the place probably been there since then. But it was nice to see. It was good stuff. Everybody had a nice time. But I didn't get to watch the Oral Roberts game, which was a pretty good game. So, Maddie, I couldn't make it past the UCLA game last night. I watched a little bit of the next one. I actually had the next one on pause, but then fell asleep. It was already getting pretty late.
Well, the last game tipped off last night at like 8:55 or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was
I watched it.
USC-Oregon, and USC had no problem.
They won the whole way.
Yeah, they were up 15 at the half and won by 14.
So there was really only one. Well, it was kind of one good game yesterday then.
Yeah, I would say all weekend there was only one or two good games. It was a lot of double digit wins.
Oral Roberts was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Michigan looked very good. I was seeing people talk about hustling defense. Boy, they had it in spades.
They looked so well coached.
Yeah.
Like they were working the clock, and then they would finish the clock on a layup. And then they'd come down and play great defense, get a rebound, and then do it all over again. It was just layup after layup, and they're taking 25 seconds off every time. It was crazy.
And Juwan Howard is an amazing coach.
It appears so.
It appears.
Yeah, it appears so.
What did you
think? Amazing assistants, too. You don't do that with just one guy.
I had the feeling that Loyola was going to have trouble with a team somewhat like themselves. And they did.
I was shocked at how Loyola could not score for about a 15-minute stretch in that game. They just couldn't score at all, and that was it.
Well, they had the two guys, one of them was 7-1, that didn't let the one guy get out of the way, do much. Their big center, the Loyola's guy.
Yeah, he shut Krutwig down, and then the Loyola was missing some open shots from the outside. They couldn't get anything going inside. And even though Loyola played great defense, and in my opinion, good enough to win, they couldn't score. So it was, even though they got it somewhat close at the very end there, I think at one point they cut it to three briefly, they had to use so much energy just to get to that point.
They were 1 of 13 at one point.
Yeah.
I think they ended up 5 of 23, but God.
Yeah, you wonder.
On the threes.
Well, they really don't have, like the other team had the one guy that actually could do something by himself. Russell, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson. Well, who's the guy in Oregon State that actually is? I mean, he can actually do something on his own. Loyola really doesn't have any of that, and but at any level, I think you can look at the films and you can shut one guy down, unless it's Michael Jordan. And the question is, are other guys going to step up? And Loyola really didn't have another scorer.
Yeah, they couldn't make an outside shot to save their life.
No, it's a shame. But anyway, Frank, we got a dash, buddy. We'll talk to you on. Thursday, there's no show this week. We have Fridays off, for people who don't know. It's a good Friday. So talk to you on Thursday. S&P Futures down 11. NASDAQ's come back, though. They're only down 6. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and it's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, we have Mr. John Flanagan with us as well. We have, evidently the ship is partially refloated, Matty. Partially refloated.
It's a good start.
S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 6, Dow futures down 121. We've got, again, with big liquidation of this one firm. We're trying to find out what exactly they lost all their money in, but we haven't had much success. Maybe today, we can report on that tomorrow. But it seems like a few banks are involved in that. DAX up, plus all the Chinese internet stocks were down. Nobody seems to know what caused that either. DAX up 76, it's 0.5. FTSE down 30 cents. Call that flat. CAC round up 27.4%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 207. That's 0.7%. Nikkei has been up, down. Shanghai up 16.5%. Hang Seng up 1. Call that flat. After being, first they were in a correction territory. They came flying back the next day. So Nomura is down 16% after they're the guys that claim they have a $2 billion loss based on this family office, which is kind of bizarre. But it is bizarre. And the Dow was up 453 on Friday, 1.4%. S&P up 65, 1.7. NASDAQ up 161, 1.2. So Friday was a big rally after kind of a lousy week. 10-year, 1.65 unchanged. The Bunds minus 0.34, so that's up a little bit. Japan minus positive 0.06. It made it to like positive 0.12. Maybe this Nomura thing is causing us to keep sneaking down here. We'll see. Oil up 45 cents, 61.42, pretty comfortably over 60 again. It's got down to like 57 last week. Brent up 58 cents, 65.15. Natural gas unchanged at 2.55. RBOB up 2.5 cents to 1.99. Well, I got gas for like 2.87, man. It's down like 12 cents in the week. Gold down $8, 17.26. Silver down 25 cents, 24.85. They cannot get out of the way. We don't understand why that is. Every day I say that. Copper down 1 cent at 405, and we've got crypto, Bitcoin up, bouncing back. You're up $2,700 to $57,881. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had a significant crash on the inbound Eisenhower overnight that still is under investigation right now. So the Eisenhower between right at Canal Street, it says it's still closed due to an earlier crash on the inbound side. This was a significant crash that happened at 2 a.m. Three vehicles were on fire and multiple fatalities reported in this crash that happened
overnight.
When
was this?
It says overnight. Entered at 2 a.m. this morning on the inbound Eisenhower at Canal Street. I haven't heard anything about it until now. But
Canal Street's like right in view of us.
That's right, yeah. So I don't know if it's clear now, but on the inbound side, it looks like maybe it's just opened up. But an investigation is still going on.
It must have just opened up. We look at the amount of cars coming down it.
Yep. Now all of a sudden there's a ton of cars coming down it. So that's not good, but that happened earlier this morning, and apparently that looks like that's cleared, but could see a little bit of congestion as you're heading in on the Eisenhower. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson, normal traffic volume starting to build up, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking okay. Off the expressways, we're all quiet as well. Weather today, it's cold early, and then we actually do warm up a little bit later this afternoon with clouds rolling in and a high of 60. Right now, it is mostly clear and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 90 today. Right now, it's clear and 56. In sports, the Blackhawks dropped a close one to Nashville last night, losing 3-2. Coyotes were off. Bulls were off. They'll return to action tonight at Golden State to take on the Warriors. That's a 9 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Suns beat the Hornets 101-97. And in college hoops, we now have our Elite Eight, which will tip off tonight. Michigan, the only somewhat local Big Ten team to make it into the Elite Eight, they blew out Florida State yesterday, 76-58. So Michigan will take on UCLA, who won in overtime last night. The rest of the Elite Eight is Gonzaga and USC, who were both winners yesterday on the one side with Michigan. And then you'll have Oregon State versus Houston tonight, followed by number one Baylor versus number three Arkansas in the nightcap tonight, which should be a good one. Jeep.
What, who gets to get murdered by Gonzaga next?
USC, who, USC looks really scary, but I still don't know if anyone can touch Gonzaga.
They look a cut above, don't they?
They definitely do.
John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm paying a little more attention to our mass shootings. Because they all were all within like a mile and a half of where I grew up. No.
Oh, really?
Well, 79th and west of Western. Where was I? 90th, right about there. So that's
That was right across from St. Rita High School. I read.
Yep.
It was like a pop up party on 79th Street somewhere.
Well, when you close the saloons, you got to have pop up parties, right?
Right.
I just wonder what it is we're doing, Jen. All weekend, of course, if you listen to News Radio 70, I don't know who does the editing there, but if you listen to traffic, if you're driving around, you end up having to listen to those guys. But all weekend, all I heard about was the guys that bust into their house. And God, if I hear one more time about handcuffing the naked lady to her desk or something, well. They went through her place when they searched the wrong place. There's no excuse for that, I guess. I mean, whatever you do, nobody's dead. Disrespected, yes. Screw up, yes. Get rid of the cops, yes. A little more training, yes. But I didn't hear a word about the three mass shootings in the city this weekend, plus the two we're talking about were what, during the week last week, right? So we've essentially had four mass shootings.
Four cops shot. Too.
Yeah. And we have four cops shot. And yet the overriding, and again, I don't care who you are, you're supposed to treat people with respect and you're supposed to do your job properly. So I think that the policemen, like they've always been, some huge percentage of people are terrific cops, yet every cop knows a cop that shouldn't be there and doesn't tell on them, which is, it's just the way I guess it is, but I mean, as you look, I'm looking at Hey Jackass here. And as I look down the thing, in 19, what are we this year? Police involved shootings in 2021. One person killed and four wounded. And yet the city has, where are we? We're at, shot and killed, year to date. 129 shot and killed, shot and wounded 582, total shots 711. Police shooting people is—it's just not the story, John. It's just not
it isn't,
the story.
Tom. And yet you would think it is the only story and the most important story, and that kind of twisting of facts to obscure what's really going on. I mean, this takes much needed attention away from what's really wrong, in big cities.
I mean, is it?
You're not going to get that kind of story in any of the news outlets, though.
Are these people right that write into me? I mean, we've got from the right, from the left, and all of them, seem like they have their edge to them. So you wonder if they're looking at the facts through filtered eyeballs. But, I just had one guy say this Loretto Hospital. Nobody cares if Loretto Hospital. I mean, you really don't want the guy getting paid off to give vaccines to the people at Trump Tower. I get that. But you know what? Out of all the stuff that's going on in the world, does it surprise me that somewhere in the system somebody said, hey, for $500, how about come and vaccinate my family? I mean, does that really shock me in Chicago? Not really, Jen. I mean, does it you?
Well, how many other ways do people jump lines?
Yeah.
Or push somebody else aside, and this is just the way of doing business. Nobody would call a newspaper about it or expect it to be reported or to be covered on the evening news or anything else.
One of the guys I know will go nameless is in a guitar class with a lady from the CPS, and she says, well, I got my vaccination. And he goes, well, how'd you get yours? Well, I'm with the CPS. You're not a teacher. Well, I know, but if you're an administrator, you get it too. I don't know. Okay, I'm not saying she shouldn't or shouldn't have, but I don't get here. I'm looking here. This is after the fiasco last week where there was eight, right? And was it Thursday night there were five? I believe. Right. Now, here we are Saturday. Let's see. 500 North Leamington. Where the hell is Leamington? It's in Austin. 12:10 p.m. Male 42, male 54, male 64. Male, we don't know how old he is. So there's four people. Now, there's a mass shooting Saturday night. Does anybody even know, care, report, give a crap? I'm thinking, I do. I think these people matter. I don't care what color they are. I assume they're black. I don't know whether they are or they aren't. Fact is, nobody should be getting shot in Chicago. Now, name me any other news source in the city today that will say what I just said. Now, here we go. Let's go to 11:35 p.m., which would be Saturday night. The other was Saturday morning, so I guess it's Friday night. 11:35, 87th and Wood, very close to my old hood. Auburn Gresham, female 31, male 34, male 46. There's only three people. But I guess in some people's eyes, that's also a mass shooting, correct? And then on Sunday, we only had a couple people shot at 3600 West Cermak, so I guess you don't call a couple people a mass shooting. I guess you got at least be three, depending on what you are. If we can't even get the facts out, if we filter the what are we doing here, John? I mean, I don't see any method here out of the. I was talking to some people Saturday night, and they're kind of people from the right, and I said, and they're talking about this politician, that politician. I said, it just could be that they. I mean, you look at the. The World War II generation, and really it was a generation where people had to do everything themselves because they couldn't afford anybody to help them out, right? And it just was a different world. I mean, you would never ask your uncle to call a plumber for the sink. He goes, no, I'll fix the sink. In my generation and yours, a little bit like that, but not as much. And in a group now, I just think the people who are currently in office now don't have the common sense. They don't have. I think they're more incompetent than they are bad. I mean, what do you think?
They're out of their element. I mean, they really have no track record running a business. I mean, you can go up and down state government and city government, and the talent pool of people in those jobs that you need the strongest, the most experienced, the most sensitive executives that you can find. And these people have never managed a Wendy's restaurant or, even a nonprofit, a small charitable group, nothing. They don't know what the dynamics are of an organization that requires firm direction, quick response from the top down, and you've got to build morale and everything else to keep the operation going. These people think they can run anything, and they've never had to prove themselves. So you got people like Lori Lightfoot and Kim Fox and Pritzker, a whole slew of these people that have convinced themselves they've got what it takes. And I don't know who told them that. But I guess the voters ended up doing it, so that's what really matters. But they'll never convince me that they have any business in those jobs at all because they don't know what they're doing.
Well, I'm surprised. I mean, we had Carl was on Friday. Carl, brings some things from another perspective, and he, I don't know. I think he's. I hope he's early. I hope he's really wrong, but he's. It's at some point, gentlemen. I don't know. I'm just observing. I mean, I'm getting. I'm stopped trying to predict because I'm so wrong at it. I'm just observing. I know two or three people. That are somewhat close to me. I'm not talking about not significant others or anything, but people that I know from just having a drink now and then or been meeting for coffee. I know like three people that have bought guns in the last month. I mean, I don't see where in the city of Chicago, when you drive through these neighborhoods and you see people that hear bullets every night, and yet 90% of our concern is for some guy, handcuffing some lady naked to a chair a year ago. I mean, isn't the first job of being in office is to protect the people who elected you? I mean, do we think our people are protected? I mean, for God's sake, a night doesn't go by. Well, I won't say that. How many days a week do you think, Manny, we're picking up shells on expressways? Three? Four?
Yeah.
I mean, Manny, when we first started the show, it was a rare event. Anybody, I mean, the problems with Chicago right now, anybody who thinks that the economics, the COVID problems, all of a sudden go away tomorrow. If God came by in a big chariot and sprinkled the whole area with the best vaccine on earth and COVID just disappeared tomorrow, anybody who thinks that the city's out of the woods is really out of their mind. The problem right now with the city is one of security. Am I wrong or not?
Well, you know, I was just talking to some people the other night about this, and the conversation got around to public transportation, and my experience of riding the Blue Line, which is, you know, the line that connects O'Hare to downtown and the West Side, you know, a lot of people, when there's tourism and business flights and everything, they take that. It's turned into just one gigantic homeless shelter. So that I now avoid riding it, not because I don't like homeless people per se. I understand that they're in tough straits, and these people break my heart. And I talk to them. I help them if I've got a couple bucks on me. But on the whole, I don't think the transit system should be run as a homeless shelter. And there should be other ways of dealing with a homeless problem, which is clearly spun out of control, and not just in Chicago. So if you can't, like, fix that problem, you're not going to get commuters riding the CTA in big numbers should things return to some kind of normal if you've dumped the entire homeless population onto the Blue Line or other L lines and expect people to somehow get along with each other. It's not going to happen. There's going to be fist fights. There's going to be shootings. There's going to be lots of unleashed anger of people who think they deserve better for paying their fare than having to sit in a car where people have been living for the last week or so, cooking their meals and eating and everything else. This is kind of what it's turned into, and I have to blame the people at the top for it. That isn't a situation that has to be that dire.
Jan, we're close
to dealing with these issues.
We close schools every year. Every one of those schools, I'm not saying you want to, this is the future, but let's say the homeless stuff is somewhat of a temporary problem. Let's hope. Every one of these schools is capable, with showers, kitchens, classrooms that could be, have cots in them, every one of them is capable of holding several hundred people. They also have classrooms where you could sort of learn. There's people you could filter the people out and figure out. And we need to filter out those that have mental problems. And a lot of this comes from we closed Tinley Park, right? We don't have a mental institution anymore, do we? Decided we don't want
it. Oak Forest there, no.
Yeah, I mean, or Tinley or Oak Forest, where the hell it was. Some of these people absolutely should be in a hospital. Some people just plain lost their jobs and are willing to work, and let's find them something. Even if we have to have a gang of 20 people out cleaning up neighborhoods, which of course a lot of neighborhoods need. There needs to be some effort here to figure out just what are we dealing with. I mean, I talk to guys here, the homeless people downtown here, although they've left because there's no traffic down here, you can't make any money. I talk to those guys not all the time, but every once in a while. And there's some people, the last guy I talked to, his name was Dan. He said I was in a pallet factory, and I could just tell by talking to him, he's not going to be able to hold a terrific job. But he perfectly capable. He goes, I was worked at a pallet factory. I had enough to have a little apartment, and I was okay. He goes, I know I'm not capable of holding a terrific job, but I could do it. All of a sudden, the place closes, and we're all out in the street. He goes, now nobody wants me. Here I am. We need to figure out. I mean, it sounds like a horrible thing, but need to herd everybody off two or three trains and say, okay, what's your situation? What's your physical well-being? What's your mental well-being? What can we do for you? It could be a hospital, not incarcerated, but a hospital for at least for a while. It could be a menial job.
Rehab,
it could be
anything,
whatever it is.
Halfway houses.
Yeah, yeah, this thing is not going to go away, and by clogging the airwaves with one police incident from the last 2 years every 20 seconds, I mean these are real problems, Janet. The word ignore comes to mind. So when you talk about the city, everybody who has the brain more of a third grader knows that your taxes are going to be through the roof because these guys still can find ways to spend money on what they want to spend money on. They don't cut any expenses to the aldermen. God knows what they do. You've got people who are aldermen over areas that are empty, right? I mean, what are we doing?
Depopulate it.
Yeah, to depopulate. Right. So, I mean, I don't see how you break the market. And this is where I'm going with this. I don't see how you decouple the market and the world and like we're doing, and we have this incredible buildup of debt both on the books and off the books, and how we think that somehow or another we're either going to just print money and pay for it, and the market's going to keep going up no matter what. I mean, I don't understand why at this point we're well into it that we don't force people, and I have not heard one word. I mean, everybody's bitching about Joe Biden with his cheat sheet on the people and so forth, and especially the people from the right are convinced he's with their horrible press conference. If you listen to it on the radio, it wasn't so bad, but it's actually sounded halfway decent. But I mean, the question is, why don't any of those people ask the right question? I mean, they're so afraid they're going to get booted out of the room. I mean, what happens if a Tom Howard or a Jan Flanagan or a Matt Weber says, Mr. President, you're going to spend $3 trillion. You've already had your Federal Reserve run up the bill for 7.5. Now, we're just going to print this money without any regard for inflation or any regard to the future. You're just going to print it. Or are you going to borrow it from people? What percentage are you going to borrow versus print? Well, why isn't that a legitimate question in this society?
I think people are entitled to hear some kind of an answer to that question, too. You know, I read something the other day that so far this year there's been something, it was a phenomenal factor. It was something like there's as much fentanyl seized at the U.S.-Mexico border year-to-date in 2021 as for all of 2020. Now, I don't really think that our enforcement methods have become better and that we're catching more. I think that the amount coming in has exploded. And God knows, if we're catching that much, imagine how much we're not catching. And I think that's responsible for a lot of the craziness that I see when I walk around the city or when I'm on the L and I see somebody who's clearly higher than a kite or drunk or both, deranged. But you add all this, you know, unsupervised infusion of drugs like fentanyl, and you get, you know, stuff like George Floyd. If we didn't have fentanyl, we wouldn't have that whole episode, probably.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to really think, why are we looking the other way about stuff that is clearly so destructive of lives and, you know, people's morale and everything else, and we focus on things that pretty much we're doing an okay job with in the kind of times we have, and there will be bad police and there will be bad incidents, but look what we're up against. I mean, there's no police force that can possibly make sense out of all this. Even if you have them armed to the teeth, it's not going to make a difference when you're deliberately, you know, subverting them, really.
Well, you're going to end up, Jen, you're going to end up with a massive shift. You've seen it in other countries. I mean, and we always thought America couldn't get there, but the reason why, I mean, the single reason why the German people loved Adolf Hitler early in his career was that because Germany was basically a cluster bleep with nothing but different parties. There were gangs roaming the street, and his gang basically took over, and it made it safe to walk down the block, right? And for all of a sudden, all that stuff stopped, right? Because people essentially went for lack of a better term, a dictator. You know, they didn't know how crazy he was, probably, because nobody knew. Well, if you read his book, you knew, I guess. And all of a sudden, for the first 5 or 6 years, there is no question that if you looked at any statistic, not any kind of morals, any statistic, the man was without question the greatest leader in the Depression in the entire world. And Germany turned around a lot faster than any other, including us. And then all of a sudden, you know, the other stuff he did managed to wreck the whole place. I've never been a fan, obviously, but I read and I look at these things. I mean, why was the man so revered by German people? Because he made it safe to go down the block. Don't think for a second that someday, if we start getting, and I sure hope I'm wrong, if we start getting, you know, 15 shootings a night in the Dan Ryan and the Eisenhower, you're going to end up with some guy who comes in and says, I'm going to stop all this. And guess what? Instead of worrying about somebody handcuffed naked to a sofa, I'm going to put 5 rat patrol jeeps out there, and any bullet comes out of any car, we're going to riddle the hell out of the thing with a machine gun, and we're going to toss the bodies off at their mom's porches and say, By the way, they're not good kids. I mean, I never want to get there, but the progression here is so rapid. This is either everybody's going to move, because Americans are not that violent, thank God, even though a lot of people think they are. Maybe everybody will just move, and it'll become another Detroit. What's the place in Ohio where they ended up having, there's a couple cities in Ohio where they just lost factories, just moved. I mean, maybe we'll be, but someplace, somewhere, somebody's going to say to Lori Lightfoot, they're going to grab her by the neck, not literally, and say, look, I don't care about this other crap. I want to be able to drive home without getting shot at. I mean, and that's where we're heading. Why don't these people pick this up, John? Why is it just us?
Well, I really think it's by design, Tom. I used to think that they were clueless, but now I think they're controlled. I think that it's all part of a plan to make people accept a third world living standard, and the sooner we get there in their eyes, the better. You can't tell me that in a city like Chicago, with the stuff we've got going on here, that it makes sense to have a commission to decide which monuments we have to tear down or study or beat up on our history about. That in all the things we need done here, that to me is not anywhere on the horizon. And yet that's the thing that, there's an article about it almost every other day in the Sun Times. And it's considered a hot item by people who should know better.
What?
I think they do know better, and they're just, this is what they're told to do.
What?
This is why they're in the jobs they have, because this is the money behind them.
John, why does somebody care at all about some guy who did something and not worry about these four people that got shot Friday night? I mean, I could care less.
You would think that clearly we got our priorities upside down. We prefer not to see dire stuff like these mass shootings, and we have to focus on stuff that, we're worried about what happened 150 years ago and whether we should.
Well, you know what? History belongs.
Looking at statues of people today, it's like, where are your brains?
History belongs to everybody. It doesn't belong to a few people, and they don't get to change it. Just saying. SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 14. History is bad for a reason. We're supposed to learn from it. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Jeff Flanagan with us as well. SP Futures down 1750. Dropping pretty hard here. NASDAQ Futures down 30. And we've got the Dow. I'm going to say the Dow's down a bunch here because I've got down 153 because I got Goldman Sachs. It's got to be a part of this deal here. Maybe you be able to dig out any more on this thing? I don't know, probably the whole story tomorrow, but well, whatever part we get. Goldman Sachs down 10 bucks. It's all about this family office here. No, Credit Suisse is down. Nomura is down 16%. These guys are taking somebody out. This was Friday afternoon. One of the stocks I noticed was down a bunch was CBS, Viacom, and they were down like, you know, 25-30%. I mean, it was a big number. Evidently, these people are, and I don't see how, well, first of all, if the market is high and you want to unload something like that, there's not a whole lot of bidders, okay? If the market is fairly priced or underpriced, there's all kinds of bids below the market. I think these people are having trouble selling this stuff off. And by liquidating, I think they're losing more money because this seems to be growing even by the morning here. I guess I could go over this again a little bit. Nomura is going to issue a trading update again, but they already have saying they have a significant loss in one of its U.S. subsidiaries, resulting transaction with a client stateside. So it's a U.S. client, but the name of look at these people. What the hell's the name of the place? I'm digging through here.
Frankly, I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is the Archegos Capital Management was forced to liquidate positions at the end of last week. But then there's some kind of a family office, and even you, Maddie, not when I say even you, don't take that the wrong way. How many times have we mentioned a former person of this Tiger Management causing trouble some other place? Guy named Bill Huang caused a wave of selling pressure on Friday. How these places can get this big, I have no idea. And, who are these people? CNBC reached out to Archegos Capital over the weekend, but calls and emails were not immediately returned. Jeez, go figure. But this thing, instead of everybody starting to downplay it, it looks like it's getting bigger, especially with Goldman Sachs now down 10-12. Everybody's got to be involved one way or the other here. And somebody must clear them. Strange stuff. Hopefully I'll dig out more of this for today, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow. But John, it never – what's what Roseanne and Danny used to say? If it's not one thing, it's another?
It's always something.
It's always something.
I was just quoting her about that the other day.
God.
Words for a time. I read that piece he sent around last night about, you know, the Supreme Court case today with the Arkansas teachers and Goldman, you know, and, you know, their puffery and their, you know, statements to their investors about integrity is our number one concern and customers come first and all that. And now they're trying to get a class action suit against Goldman. Reconstructing how far back this goes, this started in 2006, apparently. And it's been litigated since 2010 or 2011, and now it's going to the Supreme Court. And I don't know what your take on it is, but I suspect even if Goldman loses and there is a class action suit, all it's going to take is some more money from somewhere or government bailout to get rid of the problem. It isn't going to stop Goldman or other people from doing this kind of stuff.
Well, this is, everybody who's listened for a long time, and certainly Mr. Weber, remember, Maddie, I've always talked about how the mortgage situation, the demand for that crap, and I use that word specifically, was so high that they actually had to make synthetic portfolios. Because what we're talking about, and this is going back to 2007, 2008, just to refresh people's memory a little bit, you had tremendous demand for these mortgage mortgages were meshed together into these portfolios, and people bought the portfolios. And they didn't really know what they were buying, and they were getting A ratings and AA ratings and so forth. And they were only really like 6 or 6.5%, right, John? It wasn't like, if I had, you know, even, well, my clients aren't that risky, but if I had a bunch that were risky, and there was a bunch of paper out there, meaning stuff you could buy for interest, there was a bunch of paper out there that I thought was pretty good stuff, and it was 12.5%. You know, I might jump in the pool and swim after it, you know, hard, kick somebody out of the way to get it, right? But for 6.5%, I never could understand, John, why exactly the rush for something at 6.5% was all that big. Until I somehow came to the realization that the reason why it was is people were borrowing money in Japan at 2% or less and coming over here and buying these mortgage things at 6 and 6.5. So let's say, for instance, the Flanagan Weber chief triumvirate family office, if somebody was foolish enough to give us $5 million and we could go over to Japan and borrow $100 million, okay, at 2% and then buy these things at 6 or 6.5, even we can make money doing that. Except for one thing. We in order to borrow the money in Japan, we probably can't borrow at a dollar-denominated rate at 2%. We're going to have to get a yen rate at 2%. Okay, so when you do that, I'm not going to get too complicated here. Maddie, let me know if I'm too complicated. If you go and decide you want to borrow money in Japanese yen, okay, you've got to convert your dollars to yen. All right, so that part's okay. There's a spot number. I spend dollars, I get this many yen. I borrow whatever $2 million or $2 billion is in Japanese yen. I borrow at 2%. But now the problem comes if I know I'm going to hang on to this for 10 years and try and do a forward transaction 10 years from now to get back in the yen 10 years from now. The way the forward transaction is priced is they take the difference in the two interest rates. So if I were to go actually cover this thing 10 years from now on day one, I don't make any money. Right, Jen?
Right.
Well, so what you do is you leave that, I'll use a trading term, we'll leave that leg of the spread open. We'll worry about that one 10 years from now, right? So we're just going to borrow at 2%, get it back here and buy this stuff at 6 or 6.5. And I remember saying, I probably said 100 times on the show in 10 years, that actually was so bad that the signature portfolio that got Goldman Sachs all in trouble with, was it Deutsche Bank or Dresdner Bank or all those places, was actually a synthetic portfolio. There was such a demand for them that they were putting them together without even mortgages in there. They didn't have mortgages to go around. So in this particular Supreme Court suit, if you read that part, John, it said it's this synthetic portfolio. Right? It wasn't right. There weren't even mortgages in there. There were fake mortgages in there that essentially were reflecting what was happening in a portfolio that did have mortgages. I mean,
leave out the fact that some of these had no appraisals or no credit checks for the borrowers. They were mortgages, though. A lot of this stuff was virtual documents. It was like what Wells Fargo was doing to boost their numbers, just make up fake accounts for people,
but for
fake money in it.
But what my uncle used to say, we're going so bad we're eventually going to screw up sex. Well, we probably have, right? with AIDS and everything. But the point here is how can I say this? You know this better than me. The collateral on a U.S. house, somebody's domicile, for really 200 and some years has been pretty good capital. I mean, there's been pauses and there's been a few times where the prices went down a little bit. And there's surely been times where they didn't go up for a while, right, Jen? But you were never really, other than probably the Great Depression, had a spot where, 2000 maybe. You never really had a spot where everybody bought a house at 250 and a year later was worth 160. I mean, it really wasn't the deal. I mean, that you would have that kind of when your parents and my parents went in and bought their first house, you know, my parents, 1958, I don't know when year was, in the bungalow for what the hell they paid for it, $18,000. You really didn't walk into the savings and loan and say, you know what, in 2 years this thing's going to be worth $14,000 and you're going to be out of a job. That's not the way Americans look at things, right? I mean, if it's worth $18,000 today, it's certainly going to be worth $18,000 2 years from now and probably more. So this is really, these guys jammed this stuff so high that it just wasn't worth. And I remember doing with Jan and I think we were on the score at the time. And of course, I'm getting serious pushback from my significant other girlfriend who's in real estate business. And still in the stock business too, but mostly real estate. And I got this article, Jan, and I don't know where the hell I found it. Listeners then used to send me stuff too. Some guy wrote, I'm sure I still have it here someplace. Guy says, you know what? At the prices the houses are right now, and say with the, what did it get to? 235, 250 was the median house. 85% of the people in the society can't afford them. And so as I read this article, because they were talking about people's salaries back then, and they were saying, if you were in the food service industry anywhere, you were like 18 grand. Well, first of all, they said a house at 250, and then the, might have been 238 or somewhere in there. The house there where the mortgages were what, John, 6% roughly?
Yeah.
They said, if you put 20% down, if your mom and dad gave you the 20% down, and you put 20% down, you needed 85 grand a year to cover the mortgage, the insurance, the taxes, and stuff. And then they went through the list of who makes 85 grand a year. And they were, and this is in 2007. They said, okay, if you're in the food service industry, you may be pushing 20. Maybe. Right? I mean, maybe you're getting some tips on top of that. If you were, a regular person, whatever a regular person in a cubicle means, or, you know, somebody who worked in the catalog thing at Sears or whatever it was, anybody who sat in a regular office downtown that wasn't, you know, didn't have a title to them, you're making 38 to 40. And they said people in a hospital with somewhat of an executive position, not a doctor, but say you were in charge of, you know, urinalysis or something, you're making like 60. But there were very few, 15% of the population was making over 85. Yet that was the median price of the house. And whenever you see something like that, you say, oh, no, wait a minute. This can't be like this. And sure enough, it wasn't. So anyway, what John saw, but Goldman Sachs is now in the Supreme Court when people are trying to push this class action suit. I think it's a class, right, isn't it, John?
They're seeking to get class action status against Goldman. I think that's at the heart of this. So.
Well, and they're saying that Goldman Sachs is liable because they basically said everything was fine the whole way through. And these pension funds...
They didn't disclose that they knew these portfolios were sour and that they had people voting, you know, betting against them who were going to make tons of money when they failed.
I still can't figure out how the hell somebody... After all this time, John, I still can't figure out how a regular person, even somebody in the business like me, could have shorted one of those things. You had to actually call Goldman and say, I'll short them or something, and then have Goldman take the other side. They weren't traded anywhere. The idea that you could short these mortgage portfolios, unless you shorted Bear Stearns or shorted Goldman or AIG, I guess you could do that, but I don't see how you could possibly have shorted one of the... Anyway, having said that, but this is interesting, Jan, because one of the big changes this year, and every year we have our compliance people and everything, we have a big meeting here at PTI, and we talk about whatever you say to clients, you know, of course... Everybody knows on the air, I mean, I talk about everything, but one thing I don't talk about is specific trades for specific people, right? You can't do that. And if you talk about a recommendation, if somebody were to, you know, write in or something and say, what do you think about IBM? I'll say, you know, I like IBM. It's a nice company. You know, they haven't gone anywhere in a while. This is why. I'll give you some fundamentals. I'll give you some technicals. But basically, I'll never say you should buy it or you should sell it. A, because I don't know. And B, because I'm not supposed to. Okay, so that's... So they've taken it one step further now, that if somebody, the idea is that people will tell you, Matty Weber, you should buy IBM. By the way, give me some money. I'll make the trade for you, and I'll charge you a commission. All right. And that's where everybody thinks that every broker is. But you know what? Brokers aren't there. There might be a few guys like that, but we've never been like that. And so what they're saying is now that anything you say regarding a stock now can be, like, used against you. All right? So... If you take that, in other words, if somebody who's not even a client calls up and says, I have, I got all my money in Google, you know, and I say something like, man, you better sell that Google, which I never would, and he does, and all of a sudden, 6 months later, it's double, he can like, have a case against me because I gave him nothing but an opinion. So FINRA and these people are so far, you know, out of their head, so far up their behind, I can't even go there. And yet now we have a Goldman Sachs saying, oh, by the way, we can say everything's fine, and a year later it's not fine, and you're down 40% on Goldman stock. Why is that a problem for me? I mean, how can you have both of them, Jan? I mean, I think the Goldman executive...
I think Goldman's trying to characterize this as, like, sloganeering and advertising. You know, it's like putting a little motto under your logo.
But I can't do that.
This is what we stand for.
I can't lie about it. I can't do that.
That's why I think this case is kind of a non-starter for the teachers, I'm afraid, because I just don't see the Supreme Court, you know, allowing people to sue based on those kinds of statements. I mean, certainly there was enough bad stuff being done by Goldman behind the scenes here that I think should have been, you know, stopped, or somebody should have gone to jail for and everything else. But they weren't acting in a fiduciary capacity, as far as I can tell, in any of this stuff. So I don't think they're going to be able to get class action status for what they said in their promotional stuff.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. What I'm saying is, our Supreme Court justices, before they rule on this, and this will never happen in this world, this would just bothers a living bleep out of me, all seven of those people need to come to a class, I'm not saying at PTI, or someplace where there's a blackboard, or and they need to know what FINRA's doing to small people right now, and the standard they're holding small people to. Because if you either, I think Goldman should, this shouldn't go anywhere with Goldman, I honestly do. But you can't be taking XYZ little firm and say, oh man, you told this lady that she should lighten up in her IBM, and she might have a huge concentration issue. That's why you said that. And all of a sudden, a year later, IBM gets taken over. Instead of being rich, she's just halfway rich. And all of a sudden, she comes after you? I mean, you can't be doing that on one level and then let Goldman say, oh no, it's just marketing, on the other level, right? It's got to at least match up, you would think.
Well, as long as, you know, the Supreme Court is you know, made up of people the way it is, who are pretty detached from I think, the way the world looks to me. I mean, even the ones who would be most sympathetic to my viewpoint are not in my league when it comes to, you know, their personal wealth or the power that they have or the family history they have, whatever else. So I think they really are in a completely different dimension from smaller operations, and they don't think about them, and quite frankly, I don't think they care about them very much.
Well, I guess where I'm going, in order to be somewhat ordered in my thinking, which I never am, I guess, the people in government, especially the judges at that level, they need to understand, I think, the difference between what the law says right now and where your regulation is heading, because they're two totally different directions in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, I agree.
The regulation right now is designed to totally favor the Merrill Lynch's, give me your money, 1.5%, don't ever trade it for anybody, put it in the market, just charge them, and your online firms that people can blow themselves out day after day and you have no responsibility whatsoever. If you try and be a regular broker where you talk to people, all of a sudden there's all this liability. Which is, I mean, you can't tell me that's not driven by there's going to be probably 20 years from now, although I'm stubborn enough, well, and my clients are stubborn enough, we still want to do things our way. But I'll tell you what, John, the handwriting's on the wall. It's either going to be you do it all yourself and nobody cares, and if you blow yourself out, it's too bad, or you give me the money, I charge you, and I don't do anything for it, and the market just goes up. But any of the stuff that we do, the hedging or the individual management of stuff, there's not many places that do that anymore. And there's a reason for that. You know, I mean, it's pretty scary. I mean, I'm saying the Goldman Sachs is going to get out of this mess without any idea of what smaller firms are going through, because anything you say can be held against you. Now, why should a company CEO be able to get on CNBC or otherwise and say everything's fine, and 4 months later the stock's half of what it is because they got this big problem? Why isn't that guy personally liable? Why isn't he in an arbitration hearing like we would be? I mean, why is there a two-step? Is it, again, the big people don't get caught and other people do? I mean, I understand you're not going to go...
Especially when you got a revolving door between these people and, you know, the cabinet, you know, offices they hold or regulatory positions they have, and they just go back and forth. It's clear where their allegiances lie, and it's there's a certain class of protected entities that are going to be, you know, put aside and bailed out if necessary, and everybody else, you know, who's smaller and doesn't have that kind of, you know, cachet in Washington is going to be made to bear the burden of all the sloppy, you know, crookedness of the people at the top. And it's kind of an old story, I think, now. I mean, I'm beginning to see just how old it is, and it's, you know, we're talking hundreds of years probably where it's been tilted that way. But it's much worse now because you've got far more money and power invested in corners of markets and businesses that have made it, you know, so impossible to compete. And you're kind of prevented from the get-go of ever getting a clean shot or getting a fair shot in the courts or anything else.
Well, what is the What's the long term for many, many years? I mean, it's not like it was ever totally fair here, but what's the long term play in America? Is it going to be a very fascist? There's going to be the drug industry with 15 hospital groups, and oh, by the way, four drug companies. I mean, is that just the way we're going to play out? Because that's I'm not talking about dictators and concentration camps, but that's a very fascist way of doing things. You have four firms in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government. Is that where we're headed, or we're already there?
I think we're already there, and at every other level, you can see governments and the media scapegoating slices of the population and keep everybody focusing on the wrong individuals or blaming the wrong people for stuff no individual should be responsible for. Or making it impossible for people just to get along and to have civil conversations about anything anymore. You got all that on top of this, so you've got an extremely unhappy population getting ground farther and farther into the dirt all the time, and we're made to look at the wrong parties responsible for it. We're blaming each other for what isn't each other's fault.
Well, as long as you get the left and the right fighting every night, and thinking the problem is that way, then it's, because then you can do whatever you want. You can steal in the middle of the, while everybody else is, in the middle of the fight on the football field, the one guy picks up the ball and walks over to goal line, right?
What's the line in The Music Man? There's burglars in the bedroom while you're fiddling in the parlor?
That's really the... So, did you watch any of the games?
I watched the Loyola game. Just okay. Personal interest being an alum. And once my personal stake is over, I tend to lose interest pretty fast. So I didn't have anybody to root for after that.
You were? Did you get your?
Yeah, I was disappointed. I agree with what Matt said too. It just there was just a stall there. It prevented you kind of knew what was going to happen. It was kind of a foregone conclusion. It was otherwise a well played game, I thought.
Hey, Matty, we got a couple minutes here. What is the current status? I mean, I'm sitting here and I learned some of it from you and Kevin, but. What is the current status of eligibility and transfer? It seems like every team has got a transfer or two. Are the cell phones just burning up with people recruiting people that are already in college now?
Oh, yeah. You've got the competition for these people and the money to be thrown around to get them. You got a major. I mean, my community college was involved in this too. We had transfer students from Kazakhstan playing on the soccer team. I don't know how they went over and recruited. Kazakhs, but we had them.
Well, I mean,
they gave everyone a free year of eligibility this year because of COVID.
Right, but I mean, you can still.
Everyone has a free, whether you're a senior or a freshman, doesn't matter. Whether you've transferred before or haven't transferred before, you have a free year to do whatever you want.
Okay.
So there's more transfers. There's going to be more transfers after this season than ever before.
Really, so you don't have to sit out a year. You just transfer.
Yes.
Now, why would the COVID make you transfer if your school's open? And the other school's open. What's the connection? I don't get it.
I don't know why, but that's what they did. They announced before football came back and basketball came back that everyone has a free year.
You think these two kids at Loyola are going to law school? You went to law school there, right, Jan?
I went to DePaul for law school, but Loyola for my English.
So. Okay. Your English undergrad? I thought you did that at Notre Dame.
I did for my master's and PhD. I went to Loyola.
What exactly does a guy get a PhD in English? What does that mean? You can know the whole dictionary or what?
Pile higher and deeper. Initial stand for it.
So, in other words, these two guys from Loyola, if they went to grad school there, they could play next year, the center and the other guy.
They don't even need to go to grad school.
Well, I mean,
theoretically, it's
right,
not.
It's kind of a.
Let me give a more basic question. If you've graduated, could you still play? I don't think you can.
You'd have to take something.
What do you mean? You have to take
but
minimum.
Before amount? You could graduate, and then if you had another year of athletic eligibility, then you could transfer without sitting out a year. That was
right.
This year, they're saying whether you've graduated or not, you have a free year to do whatever you want.
Well, back in the this wasn't that long ago. When I say back in the day, the story was if you graduated, say Notre Dame, and wanted to go to wherever UCLA to play quarterback for a year. Allegedly, you were supposedly have to be in a grad study program at UCLA that Notre Dame didn't have. Wasn't that the original story?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, that that has degraded. It's sort of like the
right.
To be a casino, you got to be on a boat. That's sort of degraded too, right? It's sort of the same thing. So now you can just go wherever you want. I mean, a freshman could just get up one place and play next year for a sophomore somewhere else.
Well, just this year, yeah. Before, if you were still in your undergrad, meaning you hadn't graduated already, you would have to sit out a year to transfer.
Okay.
They're saying this year you don't have to sit out a year, and then whether you're a freshman, a senior, a junior, whatever, you get this doesn't count against your eligibility.
But you had to sit out a year, but you didn't lose the year.
Right.
So if I'm a freshman and I'm never going to play here, or maybe even I got dinged up a little bit, I could go to pick a place, Loyola, and play. I couldn't play as a sophomore, but I could play junior, senior, and I still have a year left, so if I went to law school at Loyola, I could play my fifth year.
That's correct? Right.
So, okay, but now now you don't have to sit out a year anywhere no matter what.
For this year, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the whole purpose of this was the once the recruiting stopped, the recruiting stopped. Well, now it's probably hasn't stopped, has it?
Well, they can't. You can't.
Exploding.
You cannot contact a kid at all until they put their name in the transfer portal. Once they put their name in the transfer portal, it's all hands on deck. They can be fully recruited.
They get the transfer portal out of what was the Star Trek one where they had the portal between the two galaxies and that's where the thing stood in the middle, and they had a bar there. Is there a bar in this portal? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So how many people are in this thing? This is football. This is all the other sports too. Women's volleyball, you name it. They're all in there. Everybody can go flying wherever they want.
I don't know. I assume so, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting.
Big business.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So I had one of the guys send me something last week or was giving me some long story about how they're talking about the women not having the same weight facilities and so forth. At their place, where was the women's, Maddie?
San Antonio,
and then the NIT was where?
The NIT, I think, is
Philadelphia, wasn't it?
Is it? Yeah, I don't know.
But somebody sent me something about how the men make like hundreds of millions of dollars, and the women's makes like 10 or something, or some ridiculously different number.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
No, it wouldn't. By the way, who's winning the women?
UConn appears to be by far the best team. They advanced to the Elite Eight, but the usual suspects. Baylor's really good. They're right there.
Well, they're missing one name. Notre Dame's nowhere to be found.
Notre Dame's nowhere to be found. Right.
DePaul. DePaul exited early, but they had a pretty good team.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy from Connecticut back on the bench because he was out for COVID for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's on the bench.
All right. Well, John, thank you very much, buddy. Maybe this is the week I'll see you. SP Futures now down 19. NASDAQ Futures down 18. This story, these people liquidating these stocks, seems to be getting a little bit bigger. I got Goldman Sachs. Well, Goldman Sachs actually rallied back. They're only down 8 now. They were down 10. Be right back. Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call, 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have an interesting morning here with the this particular company that, well, Mike's going to know more about this, I hope. This company that is liquidating this morning and has this, S&P's down 20 and NASDAQ futures down 24. It's got Goldman Sachs down 775, was down over 10, and Nomura down 16%. So, and stuff's happening here, and we're trying to figure out how these banks got involved in this place to the point where everybody's losing all his money. Dow's down 154. Like I said, probably 75 points of that is Goldman Sachs. Or make that maybe more like maybe 60 points, but a bunch of it. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down up 56.3%. FTSE down 19.3%. CAC around up 19.3%. Credit Suisse is down 13%. They're involved here as well. Seems like whoever it is big enough to get their fingers in just about every pie. Nikkei down up 207. That's 0.7%. Shanghai up 16. 0.5%. Hang Seng up 1. Call that flat. Again, Nomura is down 16% after they claim $2 billion loss on this family office that hopefully Mike will enlighten us about more, because I've been trying to find out about it all morning here. A 10-year 1.65. Bund minus 0.35. Japan minus 0.06. Again, those guys are drop it a little bit, and maybe the money have to go in the system to bail out this Nomura. I can't believe this thing's that big, but maybe it is. Oil up 45 cents, 61.42. Brent up 50 cents, 65.07. Natural gas up a penny, 2.57. RBOB up 2 cents. Dollar 19966, Maddie, but not 2 bucks yet. Gold down 6 bucks, 17.28. Silver down 16 cents, 24.94. Copper down a penny, 4.05. We got crypto bouncing back here, 29.01. The Bitcoin up to 58,035. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and nasty-ass traffic, huh?
Yeah. We got some real quick here. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We got a little more information on the overnight Eisenhower issues. Apparently, it was two separate wrong-way incidents, Chief. Five killed and two separate wrong-way crashes on the Eisenhower Expressway early this morning. One right here at Canal Street, and then the other one was a little bit further west in Forest Park. But both happened around 1:45 a.m. and involved drivers going the wrong way on the eastbound I-290 Eisenhower. And so that had 290 closed this morning until 6:30.
So did somebody... They must have had to start out westbound right outside our window here.
Yeah, that's all. I'm trying to think, where would you even get on?
Because either here, or there's no exit between here and Canal.
Right. So that was the big issue overnight. That is clear, but talk about sad. Five people died. You're minding your own business going the correct way, and all of a sudden a car is heading straight at you on 290.
Unless some idiot was going the wrong way in Lower Wacker Drive and spun up that way.
Well, that's possible, too. So far this morning, the Eisenhower is looking okay. It's open in both directions, and no accidents or major issues to report. A big crash right now on Lakeshore Drive. This is on the southbound side, on the north side of the city at Fullerton. The crash is blocking the two right lanes, so some congestion on Lakeshore Drive right now due to a crash on the southbound side at Fullerton. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy right now. Traffic volume's building up. Same for the Stevenson. There's some ramp restrictions in a couple of areas on the Stevenson causing issue. Southside expressways are looking okay. Off the expressways, there's a crash at 111th and Roberts. Looks like there's a closure due to a fatal shooting investigation at 24th Street between Sawyer and Spalding Avenue on the west side there. One other crash in the area is out in Elgin, Big Timber Road at North State Street. There is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds and temperatures warming up this afternoon. Right now it's overcast and 36, going up to a cloudy high of 60 today. So that'll feel nice. For our Phoenix listeners, it's going to be hot. First hot day of the spring. Partly cloudy with a high of 90 today in Phoenix. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, Blackhawks lost to the Predators 3-2. Bulls were off. They're at Golden State tonight. That's a 9 p.m. tip. Suns beat the Hornets 101-97. And in college hoops, Michigan, the last sort of Midwestern Big Ten team to keep going in the tournament. They're in the Elite Eight after they blew out Florida State 76-58. Chief.
Mike, are you with us, bud?
Yes, I am, Chief. How's it going this morning?
All right, boy. We miss you when you're not here.
Well, I miss being here. I miss talking to you on Monday.
What is the deal with this family Archegos Capital Management? How do they manage to take four banks now into the crap hole?
Wow.
What is going on with these guys?
You know, I don't know. I've been looking into this this morning. This was kind of out of left field. I hadn't heard about this. And you know it's got to be big when you've got all the big players involved and you see movement around this particular news event. So I think, you know, more to come for sure. But there's just not enough information out there right now to make a real solid call on what exactly is going on. What were you able to find out, Chief?
It's just, well, as usual, it's a former Tiger management guy that caused the trouble. Imagine that.
There you go.
What did you guys think? I mean, you guys have more research to your fingertips than I do. What did you think was happening Friday afternoon when CBS Viacom and those stocks were down that much and on a huge uptick tape?
It raised, you know, honestly, we didn't do any research around it as much as maybe in hindsight, maybe we could have. But the fact of the matter is, we often attribute that to, you know, the Friday tendency to see reversals and the possibility, you know, just Friday towards the close, a lot of weird things could happen. And that's, I suppose, what we chalked it all up to.
Well, for those that don't, in trader parlance, a favorable tape means in an up market. So what is it? Does it concern you, interest you that even in a market that strong, that for somebody to liquidate a couple of those stacks, they had to sell the crap out of them? They were down, what, 20-30%?
Yeah, it's definitely, it raises more than a few red flags because, you know, there's stock-specific risk going on, so something about that particular stock is causing the risk. It's obviously not the general market because we're not seeing that throughout the rest of the market. Hey, the rest of the market's at or near all-time highs, and then you've got stocks down 20%. That raises a big red flag, especially in this type of market. So we know something's going on. We know it's stock-specific, meaning it's affecting just those stocks in particular. But beyond that, we can't really predict what it means, you know, how far this can go. The only thing we can do to use as a predictor of how bad this is we can look to the IV rank. And we can look to see how high that number is, and we can say, okay, this is the amount of risk being attributed to the stock. And then we can also look to the option chain, and we can see the prices of the puts, the prices of the calls. Are they significantly higher? If they're significantly higher, that means there's a lot more risk associated with the movement, which means, in a way, that's the probability of that movement occurring.
But Mike, how can you tell if the stock that's getting pummeled is a problem with the stock, or that just is what the place has to liquidate because that's what they own?
Well, you actually can't tell the difference. I mean, you know, there's a it could be one or the other. You know, what causes a stock to sell off? Selling pressure sells the stock to sell off. So it's hard to say the catalyst is specifically the specific house risk or the specific stock risk of, say, you know, maybe one of the arms of the company is doing really bad, or some other type of management news came out that we're not privy to yet that's causing it down. But typically, if you see the market move, it moves on information. It's public information. So usually we'll know the catalyst and we'll experience the move. But right now it seems to be somewhat veiled what exactly is moving this.
Well, it's put this way. It's, you and I don't have the information, but the firm that's doing the trade does. I mean, this is where your Goldman and people, and you and I can both tell stories. I mean, I can certainly tell them. And,
oh, yeah.
Regarding, you know, and they do this to their own clients. It's like, you know, like how about screwing over your wife or sister? I mean, if somebody all of a sudden has a problem, you know, they'll say, well, we don't have a real buyer down here. Well, by the way, who's going to buy it there? Well, I will. Okay, now there's an arm's length transaction, isn't it? I mean, Dr. J will tell you the story about the Simplot and how his stock was flying down one day. I don't know what happened, and Goldman Sachs made him a bid at like $6, and as soon as they bought it there, they turned around and put out a buy recommendation on the stock and sold the stuff out at 9 the same day or something. And so, you know,
right, yeah, right.
But there are people who do know. I mean, this is the weird part about this whole thing, is when you went to the trading floor, there's a very simple rule. If I went in and was a market maker in a stock and traded, I could not be a broker and do a trade for somebody else in a stock that I did on a day that I traded for my own account in that particular stock. Now, for traders on the trading floor, that was the rule for like a really long time. Now, Goldman and those people, they have no morals at all with anything like that. And if you're their client, and they'll say, and when Mandy Weber calls up and says, geez, where can I sell? I got to sell 100,000 shares in IBM. Well, it looks like you can sell 100,000 at trading 135.40. How about like 133? That's the best you can do? Yeah, by the way, who's the buyer? Well, we are.
I mean, we are, exactly.
You know, I mean, there isn't anybody in the South Side that doesn't sit there and go, now, wait a minute, you are? You're telling me it's a great sale, but you're going to buy it? And then they'll say they're accommodating you. Okay. Gee, Mike, that car you've got is worth $20,000, and I know you got a problem, so I'll give you a 10. I'm accommodating you. I'll have you. You're not accommodating me. You're stealing it from me. I mean, come on. But,
yeah, that tends to be Goldman Sachs' reputation, and they're quite good at defending themselves. But at the end of the day, when you look at the action and you look at how they went about doing it, they definitely are the biggest game in town, and they're able to, when you are the biggest game in town, to sort of not so much break the rules as just bend them to make them fit your what you're looking for and the outcome you are looking for. And definitely when you're on top, you can make the market because you are the market in a sense. So whenever you see Goldman Sachs actually getting hit and losing money on something that they're connected to, it raises an eyebrow because we all know Goldman doesn't lose too often.
Well, explain it if you can, and if you can't, I mean, I certainly we'll fight over it together. But if you and I are managing Weber family office, okay, and we've got, you know, say it's a $10 billion office, and we screw up, and somehow we're short. We knew some people that were short those crazy VX things that weren't even ETFs, whatever they were. So say we blow out our 10 million and another 5. Okay, well that's on, and we're clearing through Goldman or you know what used to be First Stop, or we're clearing through SocGen or somebody. I mean, if we can't come in with the money for the other 5, I mean SocGen's on the hook, right? But how big do you have how big do you have to be? And what kind of connections do you have to blow through SocGen to Credit Suisse to like 3 other banks would be involved in Nomura? How do you get so big where SocGen has to have a deal with Nomura just to handle our crap? And I can't even imagine being that big.
Well, I don't know. You know, a long time ago we had too big to fail, and these guys fell into the category of maybe being too big to fail, and you could possibly make the argument that they are now at this point too big to fail. And it's really hard to say how you can get that big, but somehow I would say these guys have gotten to that point.
Well, I just don't, I don't see what Sock Gen would have, if our firm ever got that big, if we had $100 billion in the place and we blew out for 30, how the hell would you get from Sock Gen to Nomura to Goldman? I mean, what would cause Nomura to have a position with Sock Gen on our crap unless we were doing futures stuff? We had to have been doing foreign transactions where now all of a sudden we're not good for our side of the trade with Nomura. It's got to be, you know, over-the-counter transactions. It's got to be. It can't be exchange-traded stuff.
I would guess it's over-the-counter. You know, much like in 2008, things were over-the-counter. It was specific deals being made. I would guess it's the same type of problems are running to it, whether they're types of derivatives, that would be my guess. But, again, hard to say without the information being out there. It makes it more elusive, if you will, when you don't have the information. It's definitely going to cause more fear on the street the less information that's out there, especially if there's a need for some sort of semblance of, hey, what's going on? You know, why are we seeing this volatility? So I'd expect to see some more come out today, or expect to see the losses really start to accelerate.
Well, what we're talking about here, it is, I know it's a little technical, but by the way, this is technical. What's happening today? So we can't really back off that. If an exchange traded transaction, which is the reason why you want exchanges, say I'm on the trading floor or I'm a client, okay? If I go in and I buy 10 call options and whatever XYZ, or if I'm on the trading floor, if I buy 10 and I buy them from Matt Weber, okay, and if it turns out that I sell the same 10 to Mike, oh, I'm flat because my position is with OCC. It's not with Matt Weber. It's not with Mike. Okay, there's no, which other than the out trade that day, which could happen, that Matty says you never traded with him, or so did you, we had a wrong price or something. But say that doesn't happen. Okay, I'm flat. I don't worry about my position once they clear with those two guys. What they have is their own business. But now, for instance, if I bet on, I was going to say Arnold Palmer, but he's dead. If I bet on Loyola with Matty Weber and say I don't really like Loyola anymore, and I turn around and bet on Oregon State with Mike, I think I'm flat, but I'm not. Because if Matty doesn't pay me, and that's the one I win, then I still owe Mike. Okay? So when you do the over-the-counter trades, I mean, this stuff happens all the time. All your currency stuff is all... So say, for instance, this group might have done a huge trade with Nomura, and took the other side against Goldman Sachs. Well, one of them is probably a loser. So if all of a sudden something happens in a third place, and all of a sudden I can't make the trade good to Nomura, now Nomura probably bought and sold thinking that they were flat, and they're not. So it becomes a big cluster bleep if it's all over the counter, because you're never flat. I bet against the Bears with Matty. I took the, you know, the Rams with Thomas. I think I'm flat. And all of a sudden, where the hell's Thomas? He's in the Bahamas. No, okay. Well, I still owe Matty, right? So these guys must have been big enough to essentially bust through the exchange stuff and are doing counterparty stuff with other places, which is pretty darn big. And you got to be really careful watching those guys. You would think, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there is a lot of regulation around that, but you know, we say regulation, it's a lot different on the retail level, the type of regulation we see, compared to the regulation that the, you know, larger banks are privy to. They're given the benefit of the doubt so often, and they're able to get into these things that you look backwards on and you say, well, how on earth were they able to get into these in the first place? And that's the advantage of being sort of the house of the market, where you're able to manipulate situations where, like you said with the IBM situation, you're able to buy back the shares and be the house buying back the shares for for an extreme discount, say. So, you know, when you get really big, the rules begin to bend, and we've noticed that many times in the past. I just wonder if this is another one of those situations.
Well, Mike, the crux for the retail trader and the thing I'm worried about here, and again, I'm just lobbing it out there. Don't go selling or anything or buying on my account. But if, for instance, the CBS, Viacom, I mean, what if we talked last week? I mean, I don't think you were on. We were talking about Caterpillar. One of the listeners was interested in it, and I looked it up. I think it's 41 times earnings for essentially a bulldozer company. I don't think I've ever seen it that high.
Yeah.
So now, should a retail trader be concerned about how low they had to go in those couple stocks on Friday to liquidate? I mean, if I needed to sell, you know, 400 million shares of Caterpillar, which is trading 228.45 down a buck 05, is my price, you know, 226? I mean, which means it's right there and everybody wants it a little bit below the market and wants to sell it above, or would I have to sell it at like 180? I mean, I don't think CBS, Viacom looked to me to be that risky to start with. And if the thing got down, it got hammered. I mean, why weren't people there clamoring to buy it down lower? Is this stuff, you know, priced high, but it's a balloon here, or what are we? I mean, I'm not saying that. Should I be concerned about it, I guess, is my question.
I think so. I think you should be concerned about it. I think we all should be concerned about it. The fact of the matter is, when we're priced at so many multiples, we're comfortable when it stays status quo, but when things really start getting shaken up, you can easily say, well, I don't know what's going on, and I certainly don't like it at 25x. I don't like it at 20x. I don't know what X number really means. It's all relative to the fact that it was stable, but when you have instability at such high levels, to me, it makes it much harder to stand behind a stock, and it gives kind of credence to that idea that, you know, as we get higher and higher, the possibility for a larger and larger downturn lends itself as a possibility.
Well, I was saying that last week, was actually 2 weeks ago now, I was looking at, there was an earnings play, so I was looking at this Coop and Crowd, and I don't even know what these people do. Coop does Coop software. I mean, you probably know these people. I don't know who they are. So I kicked that one up, and I'm going, God, these guys are like, they're like 360. What do these guys do? So, and I still don't know what they do, but I kick up their fundamentals, and they're like, I think they were, I don't know, some incredible multiple times revenue. And I'm thinking, God, you know, I don't want to do an earnings plan here. And B, I was just talking about it in the air. I said, I don't know what the Crowd was the other one. I said, I don't know what these things do, but why do people, even the people who know more than me about what they do and what their future might hold, it seems a tad pricey. Well, the thing's down 100 and some bucks in like a week. That's like a lot of dough. I mean, I used to trade when there was only one stock on the floor that was over 100 bucks. Now, this thing deflates 100 in 10 days and nobody cares. Or goes up. I mean, this stuff is, I mean, it looks to me, maybe it's just because of my point of view or my history, but these things look like they're cloud. We can't all be going to spend all our money in the cloud, are we?
I mean, it's hard to say. You know, look at where the market is. Look at where volatility is. We've been buying stocks that have been appreciating for a year and a half now. A year anyway. So they've been really on a major appreciation. Everything appears to be in the clouds right now. There's very little so-called value, or what we might have used to call value stocks. Everything is trading on higher multiples than we've seen before. And when you have a market trading at all-time highs in new territory, a new territory of highs that we haven't seen before, everything gets a little questionable. And I think that's one reason why you see volatility isn't disappearing this time around. Normally when we're at all-time highs, we see volatility begin to contract and get very small, and it's just not. I mean, in fact, the matter is, this little shakeup from Friday and what we're seeing this morning, it's enough to cause volatility to raise a point and a half anyways, but above the 20 handle. And every time I come on the show, I mention the 20 handle being an interesting point because it's well above historical averages, and we've been there for a whole year trading at a very high level of volatility. So if that's any indication, It just means there's more risk in the system right now.
Well, plus, for it to be up 160 today, coming into essentially a holiday week, Eastern weekend, and Europe's off Monday, right? Are you there off Easter Monday?
That's right.
So, I mean, for it to be spiking here is really unusual, right?
It is, yeah. It's unusual. Normally, you'd expect a little more of a quiet, sort of subdued market.
All right, bud, we're going to have to take off here. Hey, who's tomorrow, you or Jeff?
I believe it's Jeff.
All right, bud, well, you have a nice weekend and enjoy your day off, and let's hope the market doesn't go too crazy here this week. We could maybe use a little bit of a break, eh? We'll see.
Sounds good to me.
All right, bud. S&P futures down 21. NASDAQ futures down 54. I've got Goldman Sachs, which is a big mover, down 750. I've got Morgan Stanley down almost $4. Again, this is this liquidation of this one fund that's causing some trouble. We'll talk about it more tomorrow morning.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.